Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. Why aren't you Catholic? That's what we'd like to know today. And we've got Jimmy Akin with us for a fun Friday. It's always a fun Friday when Jimmy's around. So if you have a reason that you are not Catholic and you'd like to talk with Jimmy Akin about it, you are very welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. There can be all kinds of reasons for not being Catholic, to no one's ever asked me, no one's ever invited me, to I haven't gotten baptized yet, and Easter is in 2.5 weeks, and anything in between. 888-318-7884. Jimmy Akin is senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, the proprietor of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World and the Jimmy Akin Podcast, and the author of whole bunch of books, including The Bible is a Catholic Book. Jimmy Akin, thank you for being here.
Hello. How's it going, Sock Hillett?
It's going pretty darn good. Pretty darn good. We asked people yesterday to tell us why they're not Catholic, and they're generous enough to call, but this is another opportunity to do that. And maybe I should say, if you're not Catholic, we're going to put you at the top of the line. But if you're a Catholic and you need some help with someone else, you know, a family member or friend or acquaintance who you'd like to answer their objection to Catholicism, you're welcome to call as well at 888-318-7884. All right, Jimmy, question in already, and I am told to get to the questions as quickly as I can these days. So Sarah's in Colorado. Sarah, thank you very much for waiting. 30 seconds, I believe it was, but we're happy to have you. Why aren't you Catholic?
Hi. Well, I'm actually a new Catholic about 3 years ago.
Oh, all right.
And my parents are not, and my mom especially always is bringing this up. And I am always, and it's also something that bothered me before becoming Catholic, and I still can't find an answer. But we hear so many wonderful conversion stories from the Muslim world of people, of Jesus appearing in dreams and pointing people to Jesus, and often telling them to go search out a certain person, and they get connected with a church. But almost every conversion story brings them to a Protestant church. And I'm just so confused about why it's not brought straight to a Catholic church. And I wonder if you have a theory.
Well, this is a subject that I've been aware of for a while, and I've been doing research on it, and I can tell you the present state of my research. So there are anecdotal reports, primarily coming out of the Protestant world, of people who were Muslim, who had a dream of Jesus, and then ended up becoming convinced of the Christian faith. And they have a wide range of different levels of practice. In some cases, they are in situations where they basically keep their faith to themselves, or they only talk with other people online about it, and they're not able to actually get baptized and become part of a local Christian community. There are others who are fortunate enough to be able to do that. At the present time, I don't have anything more than just anecdotal accounts. And so that raises several questions in my mind. One of them is this a real phenomenon? Because if it could be that this is not a real phenomenon, that these stories are made up or exaggerations, that some of them could even be hoaxes, because we're dealing with essentially a rumor network about these. And whenever you're dealing with a rumor network, you don't want to put too much faith in the rumors that are circulating. I'm familiar with multiple rumor networks on other topics, not this, but on other subjects. And frequently the rumor networks are not very reliable. So what I've been trying to do is contact people who have direct personal knowledge of these so that I'm not simply dependent. I mean, I'd love this to be true. I hope it is true. But I've been looking for people who have direct personal knowledge of the situation. And thus far, I've had trouble finding people with direct personal knowledge of the situation. So I suspect there may be a significant element of exaggeration or rumor inaccuracy here. So I'm not even sure if this is a sizable phenomenon. Now, Jesus can appear to anybody in history, and I'm sure that he sometimes appears to people with a Muslim background, but whether there is a present wave of Muslim conversions because of dreams of Jesus, as opposed to other societal factors, that's something I'm currently leaving open, because I just have not been able to get the kind of data that I would need to validate this. I have located like books about this, and I have read books on this subject, but the data just is not concrete enough for me to be able to move this off of the "it's just a rumor" possibility and conclude that there is definitely a real and notable phenomenon here. Assuming, though, that there is a real and notable phenomenon here, I would say a couple of things about the reported difference between them becoming Protestant and them becoming Catholic. There are several factors I could see that are, or that could be responsible for that. The first one is a variation on the initial question of, could this be a reporting artifact? Maybe there are lots of conversions to the Catholic faith, and you're just not hearing about them, in part because Catholics have a longstanding presence in the Middle East, including in Muslim countries, and they've learned to keep their mouths shut about situations like this. In fact, I've worked with Muslim converts in the Middle East, and we've taken very significant steps and elsewhere, not just in the Middle East but elsewhere, and we've taken very significant steps to keep their identities private so that they're not put in danger in their society or from their own family or things like that. So it may simply be that Catholics are more careful about talking about these matters compared to some of our more freewheeling Protestant friends. So it could be a data reporting artifact that is responsible for any disparity that's perceived here. Another possible factor that could be present is Protestants tend to be more freewheeling about their Christian community, having a purely online relationship with people who share the Christian faith is something that many in the Protestant world might be more open to, whereas Catholics, being a sacramental faith, which some Protestants are also sacramental, but not all of them. There are other Protestants who are notably desacramentalized. Catholics might, be more insistent on you need to become part of a local Christian community. And if there's not a local Christian community that's publicly identified and can be found in their area, then they might go with the more loosey-goosey, you don't need to be baptized, you don't need to attend a local church, it's sufficient to hang out in an internet chat room. And so that could be part of what's going on here. And given that reality, it could be that, that's better than no contact with other Christians. And so some of them might be directed to find that kind of community. So I would say there are multiple unknowns here, and that prevents me from having any firm opinion in this area because of all the unknowns. But there are also factors that could be playing a role. This could be a data reporting artifact. It could be that there are cultural factors in certain forms of evangelicalism that are different than in the Catholic Church that are responsible. And so I think there are multiple possibilities here. And I wouldn't, if I was on one side or the other, I wouldn't be trying to hold this out as, oh, this is proof that we're right, because I don't even know if this is a notable phenomenon, if it's happening in any notable way right now. And there are multiple possible explanations for the appearances that you've described.
Interesting. Thank you. Those are very thoughtful theories, and I appreciate you taking the time to share them.
No problem. Happy to be of assistance.
Thank you, Sarah. That has brought us right to the break. Three lines open right now. If you're not a Catholic and you'd like to share why with us, Jimmy Akin is our guest. 888-318-7884.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Check out EWTN's official YouTube channel.
Just follow the link on our homepage at EWTN.com or go to YouTube.com/EWTN.
Watch EWTN's live shows or today's homily from the Daily Mass.
Click the upload button to see our most recent clips.
You can also find all of EWTN YouTube content by clicking the playlist button.
It's all on the official EWTN YouTube channel at YouTube.com/EWTN.
Visit today.
Welcome back, Jimmy Akin, our guest. Why aren't you Catholic is our question today. And if you're not a Catholic and you'd like to call and talk with Jimmy Akin about it, 888-318-7884. Many people do like to talk to Jimmy Akin, and a lot of it has to do with Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, one of the most popular documentary podcasts out there. Each Friday, a new episode, hundreds of episodes now. I think, unless I am mistaken, more than 400 episodes now available of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. That's good work, Jimmy. What dropped today?
Thank you. Today, we look at the mystery of radiation, because even though radiation has been around for not only all of human history, but almost all of cosmic history, it took humans a while to figure that out. And there was a crucial period of years between 1895 and 1900, where it all really came together, and there was a whole series of discoveries that built up into a modern understanding of radioactivity. And so that's what we look at, and there are some really, really interesting stories about how we discovered the different kinds of radiation and so forth. You may have heard of Wilhelm Röntgen, who was the discoverer of X-rays.
No, okay.
And he discovered them by accident working in his lab, and he thought he was going crazy. And so because they seemed magical, I mean, they can penetrate substances and you can't see them, so they're these invisible things, and they go through some things but not others. It sounded crazy, especially in a world that didn't have the concept of radiation. So he squirreled himself away for a few weeks working on them. And then he finally decided, and he told his wife, people are going to say I'm crazy, but he finally asked his wife Berta to come in so he could show them to her, so he could get some kind of external validation that he's not just crazy. And so she came in and he showed her an X-ray of her hand, and she could see the bones of her hand. And this totally freaked her out.
Whoa.
Nobody had ever seen, you know, the bones of their hand before with their flesh around it.
Right.
And she said, I have seen my own death.
Oh my gosh.
So she was horrified and wouldn't go in his lab anymore, but she confirmed to him he wasn't totally crazy.
Yeah.
Also, Nikola Tesla had done some work with X-rays, and he was not as careful as Rentgen was. Tesla was pretty freewheeling, and so he developed something that seemed to emit X-rays, and he thought, okay, let's crank it up to the max and then stick my head in it.
Oh, that seems smart. Yeah.
And he noticed that after having his head in the full power beam of X-rays for a little bit, he started to feel sleepy and had a distorted sense of time. And he concluded, I've found a new sleep aid that's safer than narcotics.
Oh, yes. Let's just all X-ray our heads till we fall asleep.
Yeah,
that seems
exactly
like a good plan.
He quickly published a couple of additional papers, though, in which he concluded maybe that's not the best use of X-rays.
By the way, what did Tesla die of? Do we know? Because I'm thinking brain cancer might have been one of them. No.
I don't believe that's how Tesla died.
Are you do you also cover gamma rays in there? Because I've done science on gamma rays myself, and did they turn you green? Is there a chance that they'll turn you green?
Well, they did Bruce Banner, but not too many other folks.
That's where I did my research.
I do cover alpha rays and beta rays and gamma rays and other forms of radioactivity.
Someone needs to write a song about all those rays. It sounded very rhythmic the way you were saying it. All right, back to the phones we go. Lots of calls now. Why aren't you Catholic today with Jimmy Akin? If you want to get to Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, by the way, mysterious.fm. You can go to Jimmy Akin's YouTube channel. You can go anywhere on earth that you get your podcast, pretty much, and you can get Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. And if it's a discovery for you, you've got hundreds of good days ahead of you. Luke's in Ohio. Luke, welcome. Why aren't you Catholic?
Hi. I'm not Catholic because there's no marriage in heaven, and I feel like my God-given, you know, masculinity is like only makes sense in exclusive like union with like femininity, like a woman. And like God is a father and like not a mother, you know. I know he's genderless, but like he, you know, his feminine side isn't, I don't know if he has a feminine side, but I just feel like I'm incomplete without femininity.
Okay. Let me ask you a question, Luke. Are you a Christian at all, or are you a non-Christian?
I'm a Christian, yes.
How do you, well, this is a curiosity question for me. I'll get to the substance of your question in a moment, but how do you square that? Because it's in the Gospels that there's no marriage in heaven. I mean, Jesus says that flat out in the Gospels. And so that's something that Christians in general have believe. So how do you fellowship and participate in a Christian community if it teaches that? Because it would seem to me that would be a reason not to be a Christian rather than not to be a Catholic.
Yeah, I mean, like, I left the Catholic Church, and, like, I looked at, like, other Christian denominations, but, you know, that's, you know, I'm on the verge of kind of just, you know, leaving Christianity altogether, I would say.
I see. Okay. Well, I'll be happy to do my best to help with this question. So let me pose a few questions here. So what's the purpose of having, speaking in the broadest possible terms, what's the purpose behind having the male and female sexes?
I would say to procreate.
Yeah. Okay, good. I would agree. That's the fundamental purpose. Now, there are other lesser purposes, but that's the big one. And that's why a very large number of organisms on Earth have two sexes. There are a few that only have one sex, but the vast majority, including even plants, which we normally think of as asexual, plants actually tend to have both sexes. We have a huge number of organisms with two sexes, and the primary purpose of that is procreation. So, given that the primary purpose is procreation, are there any phases of the human life where we're not procreating, and therefore where the two sexes don't need to be united. Can you think of any?
I would say when we're young.
When we're young, yeah, that's right. We're not procreating when we're young. We're not even able to procreate when we're young. We still have our sex, we're either male or female, but procreation is not for that phase of our existence. And so we don't need to be united with a person of the opposite gender during that phase. Also, I'd point out, not everybody needs to be united with a person of the opposite gender. This is something that Jesus talks about. St. Paul also talks about it. And human experience points that out too. Not everybody has a burning desire to be united maritally or sexually with a member of the opposite sex. So some people, you may feel it more strongly than some people, and that would be an argument for you personally. Well, yeah, you want to get married, but not everybody is in that same situation. And Christianity has places, and Catholicism has places for that, where, you know, some people, their gift is to be married, and that's great, and they help, you know, procreate the species. And then other people, they have a different calling. They're not called to be married, and there's a place for them in the Catholic community too. So it's a community and a faith that accommodates these different, different modes of life that people are called to. But going back to the fact that we don't always, in all phases of our existence, need to procreate or even have the ability to procreate, and you correctly identified that that's the case for the beginning of our lives, well, then let's think about the next life. Because if our bodies have died, then are we going to be procreating in the afterlife?
I would say no.
Okay, good. And Jesus agrees with that. So if we have these two sexes so that we can procreate when it's appropriate for us to do so, but it's not appropriate for us to procreate when we're young, and if it's not appropriate for us to procreate after this life, then it would make sense that marriage is something that is for this life, for adults in this life. And the fact that there's no marriage in heaven actually makes sense. If we're not going to be reproducing in heaven, then it would make sense for us not to have marriage in heaven. That doesn't mean that we can't be spiritually and emotionally united to people of the opposite sex. In fact, I would say, I mean, I'm a widower, and so, you know, I hope and pray to that I'll make it to heaven and see my wife in heaven, and I'm sure we'll love each other even more intensely in heaven than we did on earth. And so there can be spiritual intimacy and love and happiness and all those things in heaven. It's just we're not going to be in a sexual relationship at that point because we're immortals and don't need to procreate to keep the race going at that point. So those are some of the thoughts that occur to me initially. Also, I would say that there's a caution that I should give about being guided by one's feelings. Because feelings are subjective and they change over time. I make a policy of trying to sort of set my feelings aside when I'm looking at important questions like religion and not think what would I want to be true or what would I find disappointing, but what do I actually have evidence for? And the evidence to me from the Gospels, which I also believe I have good evidence to trust, is that, well, we won't be marrying in heaven, and that seems reasonable. And so I've sketched a framework that I think makes sense. It sounds like you find certainly elements of it reasonable, Luke. So I would offer that for your reflection. Also, I have a book called A Daily Defense, in which I look at bunches of different objections. And since this is a concern that that you've had. There may be additional material in the book that could be of assistance to you. And you're here in the continental United States. So if you want to hang on the line, Luke, we'll see about sending you a copy for free.
Hang on, Luke. We'd love to send it to you, A Daily Defense. And thank you very much. On we go, though, because there are lots of folks on the line. And it's funny because I laugh because we start and we wonder if anybody will call. And then the lines fill up. And now there is just one line open. If you are not a Catholic and you want to tell us why you are not a Catholic, Jimmy Akin here to take your call and have that conversation. You really are welcome and you really are doing us a favor when it helps to make for a good radio program. So please don't hesitate. If you're not a Catholic and you'd like to tell us why, 888-318-7884. I realize now we got to take a very quick break, so I will encourage you again to visit Jimmy Akin's channel on YouTube, because in addition to the podcast that I mentioned before, the Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, he now has the Jimmy Akin podcast, exploring all kinds of mysteries of the faith. You just have a great time. You're exploring all kinds of interesting things like, well, I've already told Jimmy this before. Among my favorites are when he tries to tell me when the books of the Bible were written and talks about all the different evidence. It's like doing a little detective work to find out when the books of the Bible were written. Check it out at Jimmy Akin's YouTube channel. Right back. We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests. He does on-air debates. And he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Throughout history, some Catholics have been among the worst kind of villains, right? Or were they? In Canceled, historian Steve Weidenkopf digs into the lives and controversies of some of these Catholics whose reputations have been blackened, often unfairly. He takes on the anti-Catholic versions of history and defends not only these figures, but the faith they represent. Order your copy of Canceled today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore. Jimmy Akin, our guest, Catholic Answers Live. Why aren't you Catholic? Our question for you. A couple lines still open. 888-318-7884. Jimmy, you know what? You told it to me, and I was going to write it down, and I forgot it. But you said, I could say where your YouTube channel is, and it is at YouTube.com.
YouTube.com/Jimmy Akin.
Check it out there. Dan's in Houston, Texas. Dan, thank you very much for waiting. Why aren't you Catholic, Dan?
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you. There's probably a little bit more than this, but two of the things that are kind of sticking points for me are the, I'll call it the admiration of Mary, and days of obligation. I understand honoring Mary. I actually participate in the rosary a couple times a week.
Good for you.
My son converted to Catholicism a few years back, and every time he's in town, we go to a Latin Mass. So there's a lot that I've learned to appreciate being a Southern Baptist that I never thought I would. But these things are kind of, I mean, it seems like there's, in my opinion, there's a little too much attention paid to Mary. Not that she doesn't deserve our honor and our praise, but it just seems like there's, you know, maybe a little too much.
Okay, well, do you have any concrete examples of what you regard as too much? Or is it more of just a general impression?
It's more of a general. I mean, when I go to the Catholic churches, I see a lot of statues of Mary. And I was looking, and at one point it seemed like I didn't notice everything correctly, but it seemed like I almost saw more statues or images of Mary than I did of Christ himself.
Well, okay, so I guess a few thoughts on this one, and then we'll deal with your concern about Holy Days of Obligation. So I would be careful about anecdotal impressions of, well, how many statues of who are found in a given church. I can't say, because I haven't seen the churches you've been in, I can't say that they definitely don't have more statues of Mary than of Jesus, but I would be very surprised if they did. Jesus is God and Mary is not, and Catholics recognize that. And so there has been, in many Protestant circles for, you know, the last 500 years, a narrative that tries to make it sound like Catholics care more about Mary than they do about Jesus. And, you know, given that there's 1.4 billion Catholics in the world, I'm sure that there are some somewhere who have a disordered sense of priorities, but this is more of a hostile narrative towards the Catholic Church than something that's actually true. So, you know, I wouldn't go with just an impression like this. You know, I'd look, if you're concerned about how many statues there are and who they're of, I'd count them up. And I wouldn't forget that it's mandated by church law that during Mass there needs to be a crucifix with the body of Christ on it, on or near the altar. There is no such requirement about statues of Mary being in the church or near the altar. So if you're concerned about them, I'd make sure that you're not letting an anti-Catholic narrative that you may have heard in the past influence your perception of things. In other words, I just recommend, you know, checking out perceptions and see, is this perception accurate, or could it be looked at in some other way, or is it even just inaccurate? Now, I say all that assuming one should care about exactly how many statues there are. But Dan, being a Southern Baptist, I assume you've read the Gospel of John. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, and then you'll be familiar with Jesus's high priestly prayer in John chapter 17, where he prays for the unity of all of his followers, right? You're familiar with that?
Yes.
Okay, so we know the will of our Lord is for us to be united, and we therefore shouldn't separate over issues that aren't particularly serious. So even if it were true that Catholics put more emphasis on Mary than you're comfortable with, sounds like it couldn't be that much more, since you're already, you know, showing respect to Mary and you're saying the rosary and things like that. So you recognize that it's good to have, you know, honor for the mother of our Lord. And if there's you may feel that Catholics do it a little more than you prefer, but my question would be, is that something we ought to separate over? Is that something that we should let divide us? Just a matter of emphasis. If we both agree that that Mary, as the mother of our Lord, needs to be honored, and certainly he honored her because he obeyed the Ten Commandments, which include honor your father and mother, and Mary herself says in Luke that, you know, behold, now all generations are called me blessed, and we're a generation, so we need to honor her too. If it's just a question of, is there a little too much honoring going on here? That to me sounds like something that we shouldn't let divide us. We should seek to build bridges and not really sweat the fact that, well, some Christians put a little more emphasis here than is my personal taste. Also, there are varying degrees of emphasis in different Catholic communities. It's not all the same. So I guess that's kind of what I'd say about Marian devotion. The other subject you raised was about holy days of obligation. Can you help me understand your concern here?
I recognize the importance of being in church. And I guess to a certain degree, it's just the word obligation. Mm-hmm. And
okay,
am I obligated to go? Yes, I guess, you know, to a certain degree in my relationship with Christ. But I don't know. I guess I guess I've just never, growing up the way I did, I've never heard that particular phrase used, and it seems it seems odd to me that, you know, that, that not going to church on certain days is a sin.
Specific,
I mean, and yes, you know, I can understand that, that, you know, again, we are, you know, that's where we belong. That's where Christ wants us to be. So I get part of that.
Okay, so let me, and that's all good, and you're right. The term holy days of obligation is not commonly used in many Protestant circles, including in the Southern Baptist tradition. So, you know, I understand how it can sound unfamiliar, but again, differences of language is something that I don't think should. So, if it's just the word obligation, well, if it's a matter of phrasing, then I would suggest that's something that shouldn't divide us, because St. Paul says twice, actually, not to quarrel about words. So if we agree on the substance, we shouldn't let the way we phrase what we teach separate us, because that's just language differences. And different communities have different languages, and the New Testament even tells us not to quarrel about words. So let's think about the concept of what's supposed to happen on holy days of obligation, or what Catholics refer to as holy days of obligation. You're right that that we need to be in church, and you're right that, you know, that's what the Lord's will is, that, you know, we worship Him in church and we worship as a community. There are other verses in Scripture that back that up, like when Hebrews says not to forsake the assembling of yourselves together, as is the custom of some. You know, that pertains to, yeah, we need to go to church on certain times as to worship God as a corporate body. But what about the idea of an obligation? Think about the Ten Commandments. Do the Ten Commandments have any requirements in them about doing or not doing things on certain days?
True.
Yeah, they do.
That's a good point.
And these are commandments, right? They're not 10 suggestions or recommendations. So in so using the word commandment instead of obligation, you could call these holy days of commandment rather than holy days of obligation. They'd mean the same thing, but basically the Jewish Sabbath was a holy day of obligation for the Jewish people. Now, it's subsequently been replaced by the Christian Lord's Day, you know, the day of our Lord's resurrection. But it's fundamentally the same thing. And actually, of all, people often don't realize this, but in church law, Sunday is the primordial holy day of obligation. It's the king of the holy days of obligation. There are a few additional days in the year that commemorate some special things that are also holy days of obligation, but Sunday is the big and most frequent holy day of obligation, and it corresponds to, it's not the same as the Jewish Sabbath, but it corresponds to the principle we see in the Ten Commandments that we need to devote adequate time to worship and rest. So if the Jewish people had a holy day of obligation, and the Sabbath is just one of them, but if they had this concept and Catholicism has the same concept, then I would say that this is something that if I were in your position, I wouldn't stress about, because there's a rational biblical basis for it, even if the term is a little unfamiliar. What do you think of that?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. Well, I hope that this has given you some stuff to think about. I have my psychic sense tells me Cy is about to say we need to go to the break, but I hope that gives you some things to think about. And since you're also here in the U.S. and are interested in issues like this, let's see if we can send you a copy of A Daily Defense too. Hang on the line.
That's right. Hang on the line. Dan, give us an address. We'll send you A Daily Defense, 365 days plus one to becoming a better apologist. A whole bunch of, well, I just told you how many different topics covered in one page format. I think you will really enjoy the book, Dan. So do hang on and give us that address. Jimmy Akin, he didn't say Spidey sense, his psychic sense. But I have my suspicions that maybe it was a radioactive spider that gave those powers to him. I'll find out, but we'll be right back on Catholic Answers Live.
According to some versions of Spider-Man, it was a psychic spider that bit him.
Oh, the spider itself was psychic?
Yeah, it was transmitting its power to him.
I had no idea. I can hardly speak to you without learning, Jimmy. I can. All right, right back with more Why Aren't You Catholic on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
With news from EWTN's Rome office, you can watch all the important events from Rome, even if you don't have TV access. Using the latest technology, we've made it possible to watch the latest news from the Holy See, all delivered directly to your home via live streams. Watch live on EWTN's YouTube channel and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy Akin, our guest. It's Friday, and people are calling to tell us why they are not Catholic. And these make for great programs. We're very grateful to everybody who calls. I have to say, Jimmy, most of my knowledge of Spider-Man comes from watching the old cartoon show as a kid. It was my second favorite cartoon show.
Oh, what was your first?
Thank you for asking, Jimmy. Speed Racer.
It seemed like a setup. Speed Racer. Okay.
I couldn't miss Speed Racer. I had to watch Speed Racer every afternoon.
Speed Racer was not in syndication where I grew up, but I'm familiar with it. Yeah. And if you like, if you like the old Spider-Man cartoon, I had recently, you know, the famous theme song from that.
Yes.
Spider-Man does whatever a spider can.
Yeah.
Well, so in the Simpsons movie, that came out a number of years ago, there's a scene where Homer has a pig and he's holding the pig up to the ceiling and having it walk across the ceiling. Oh. And he's singing, "Spider pig, spider pig does whatever a spider pig does." And then on Mysterious World, I had someone email me because I think I'd mentioned it first, but they wrote in about a genetic experiment that had been done on some goats where they spliced spider genes into the goats
so that their milk
contains spider silk. And then you can milk them and then distill out the spider silk and use it to make I don't know, Kevlar and stuff like that. So this was a way to try to get a larger animal making more of the silk for you, because spiders are teeny and hard to milk. But this person wrote in about it, and I talked about it on the show, and I thought about the theme song from the cartoon, and I thought about the scene from the Simpsons movie. And so just for fun, I went to AI and said, rewrite the lyrics to the Spider-Man theme song, only make it about a spider goat. And it did. And then I went to another AI that makes music, and I said, write songs for this. And it did. It gave me two of them. And then I contacted my my video editor and said, I want to turn these into segments for when we do the spider goat answer in our feedback segment. Yeah. And so he used a third AI that makes video animation to produce animations for spider goat. And so we had these two animations in that one episode. But I said, and I didn't tell the audience I was going to do this, but I decided I wanted to use Spider Goat as a recurring joke at the beginning of each of our listener feedback segments. So now, after we get done talking about the mystery for the week, we suddenly have this animation of this superhero spider goat swinging in with a mail bag, distributing mail, because it's a feedback segment. And it's, oh, man, look, dude, out, here comes a spider goat. And then we do our feedback.
I have
and this
to
has
say,
become a regular
I had
thing
no
now.
Idea what I was getting involved in when I started this. That is awesome. So Spider Goat actually exists. Jimmy Akin created, yep, Spider Goat. Very nice. Mm-hmm. All right. Wait, where am I going on the phones? Oh, I'm going to Florida. Kyle's down in Florida. Yes, Kyle's down in Florida. Kyle, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your question.
No, yeah. So my question to Jimmy is, mm-hmm, has to do with Nicaea specifically and their understanding of Christology. So, mm-hmm, I've done a lot of research into Christology, reading like Brian Petrie, some other, mm-hmm, scholars, like I can't remember top off my head. But yeah, I've read a lot of literature on Christology, how sort of like, I guess, a historical defense of Jesus' claims to divinity. And I don't deny, mm-hmm, that Jesus did claim to be divine. Mm-hmm. My issue is understanding what divine meant in that context. Mm-hmm. Because when you take a cognitive historical graphical approach to what divine meant, it did not mean this binary thing of God versus no God. It meant Jesus held the divine name so that he could forgive sins in God's name, he could do miracles in God's name, he can speak on behalf of God without being identical to God in the Nicene sense. Mm-hmm. So my question is, how do you reconcile Nicaea with that original context?
Well, I would say that the term divine and its Greek and Aramaic and Hebrew equivalents are not univocal. They don't have just one sense. Like many terms in many languages, including English, the term divine has multiple senses. And so I would say it's a mistake to simply identify one sense of the term divine and say, oh, that's what Jesus must have meant. It's like in English, the term divine has multiple senses, and I bet even Cy Kellett knows some of them. So Cy Kellett, can the term divine refer to God, to the big G himself?
Heck yes.
Okay.
Sorry for the harsh language.
So far as you're aware, can it also refer to other heavenly beings? Could you say angels are divine beings?
Yes.
Because they're associated with God and do things in God's name.
Yes, that is a common usage.
Okay. How about churchmen? Are churchmen, Anglican bishops, ever called divines?
Yeah, I think that's a very British way of speaking, but yes, that is right.
So we've got, and then there's, of course, divinity candy, right? You know, it's that white nougat with like typically a pecan put in it. Your mom may have made it for you at Christmas time.
It's called divinity candy?
Divinity, yeah. It's a candy.
Oh, I have not had that. No.
Oh, you'll want to check this out. But when you try divinity, you're likely to say, oh, wow, that tastes divine, which is where it got its name. So there are multiple senses of the term divine. And it would be a mistake for me to say, oh, well, Jesus said he was divine, therefore he must have been an Anglican clergyman. When there are these other senses that the term could refer to.
Right.
And so I can't simply say, well, it was used this way, so that's what it means in this case. I have to be sensitive to what information I have about how it's being used. Now, I recognize, yeah, you could describe someone who carries God's name and does miracles in God's name and things like that. You could say, yeah, that person's divine. They're doing a divine ministry without being God. But that's not all that the New Testament has to say about Jesus. It also makes it clear, and this is in multiple different passages, but in particular, it's clear in the beginning of the Gospel of John that Jesus pre-existed and was there at the beginning of all things. So he wasn't just a man that got born in this life. Also, St. Paul, who wrote some of the earliest Christian literature we have, he makes it clear that all things were created through Jesus, and thus Jesus pre-existed and was at the beginning of all things, so he wasn't just a man. And St. Paul more than once refers to him as God. And so we have additional data about Jesus by people who were closely associated with him and were part of the early Christian community. And they say things that portray Jesus as more than just a miracle worker who you could say, well, he carries God's name and he's divine, but that actually indicate that Jesus pre-existed and is actually called God directly by St. Paul, among others. So, Dan, that's some of the information that I would bring to bear on the subject. I know you mentioned, I think you said you'd read Brant Petrie on this. Is that right?
Yeah, Brant Petrie and some other scholars.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different approaches to this question. But
I was going to mention, too, that I think...
By the way that you mentioned...
Yeah, well, before we move on, I want to mention two additional scholars you might want to check out are Richard Baucham, B-A-U-C-K-H-A-M, and also Larry Hurtado, H-U-R-T-A-D-O. They've both done work on primitive New Testament Christology, and you if you haven't read them, I'd recommend them. We're getting really super close to the end of the hour, so... If you have something you'd like to follow up on, say it real quick so I'd have a chance to respond.
Most scholars who defend the traditional view, I'm glad you mentioned Richard Baucham, because that's one of the scholars that I've read. It's just been a while since, I've been studying this stuff for a long time. So his model requires you impose a binary framework of divinity onto the text. So you did mention John, and I think you mentioned Paul as well. But I think both those traditions are working off. So I think if you look at the original context, I think both Paul and John, the book of John, whoever wrote John, they're working off the wisdom tradition. So essentially, Jesus is identified as bearing the divine name of wisdom, which in the Jewish tradition was referred to as the Torah.
Kyle, we're getting into pretty deep waters here, and we've got less than 2 minutes left on the show, so I'm afraid we're going to need to leave it there for now, but you're welcome to call back in the future, and we can talk some more, but there's a limit to how deep we can go with some of these concepts on live radio, given the format constraints, but I'm happy to help you out to the extent I can.
Kyle, we're going to have to leave it there, and I will say thank you to you for that call. Hey, there's some lines opened up, as you might expect, as we get to the top of the hour. So if you are not a Catholic and would like to tell us why you're not Catholic, as you can see, they've been very pleasant and enlightening conversations thus far this hour. That's what we'd like to do second hour. But if it's a challenge that you would like to pose, you're welcome. If it's a curiosity you have, or if it's just something you'd maybe like to understand better, and you're not Catholic and you want to tell us about that reason, 888-318-7884. Jimmy Akin is our guest. We'll just be gone a couple minutes, and then we'll come right back. 888-318-7884.